Martin Heidegger claimed that idle talk is something that anyone can take up, which releases one from the task of genuinely understanding. He wrote of public disclosedness of being with one another, where the loudest idle talk and the most ingenious curiosity keeps things moving, where, in an everyday manner, everything and at bottom nothing is happening. We have a different view. We believe that the only way to reach the truth is by talking. Like a man panning for gold in a dung heap, in amongst the blither blather, bad puns and nonsense, one might find a single grain of truth. This is Idle Talk. Open your mind and then your mouth.
Good evening, this is Idle Talk on OneRadio.org. Tonight, we are facing up to the truly terrifying question of, do we really have free will? When I choose to do something, when I choose to walk to work rather than get a lift, am I really making a decision? Do I have any option to do anything other than the thing I do? Tonight we're talking about free will and determinism. So we're going to start off with a quick definition of what we're going to need to define. It's important in philosophy to define your terms so we know what we're talking about. The issue of determinism is it's a large, cumbersome, wide-ranging area of philosophy. I'm going to focus tonight on causal determinism. In the traditional sense, determinism means it's usually, we're going to go for causal determinism, i.e. imagine everything is a result of whatever happens before it. The antecedent thing causes, like, for example, I'm hungry because I haven't eaten and I've been running all day or whatever. So that causes me then to go to a shop and buy a sandwich. We're going to use causal determinism. Basically, imagine it's best to think of it as if everything is fixed by some sort of mysterious natural law. We're not going to go down the debate of the argument of predestination. That's different to determinism. And we're going to keep religion out of this one tonight. I'm normally happy to debate religion, but that would make things very complicated, because if God can see everything that you are doing, that you're going to do and have done, do you have any choice but to do it? It's free will. It brings free will into question. And that becomes very complicated, because a huge part of the Christian doctrine is the fact that we have free will. That's what we're talking about tonight. I'd like a caller on Skype. You can join in. It's pretty much an open debate, this show. Anyone can jump in and talk to me. It's a philosophy show, but don't let that word put you off. It's philosophy I always define simply as asking questions. So we've defined determinism. It's like the world is Laplace, I never know if I say Laplace or Laplace. That's the problem with only writing philosophy and not talking about it. If I talked about this with someone, then I'd know how to pronounce it. But let's call him Laplace. It sounds cooler. Laplace talked about the universe as if it was one big, massive machine, a huge intricacy of cogs. So one thing turns another. And imagine another good analogy is, you know, that you've seen those silly executive toys where you have four balls on strings, and you swing one and it hits into the other, and one is caused by the motion of the other. The entire universe runs like that. On a molecular level, atoms bump into atoms, have an effect on other atoms. And, of course, as we sort of zoom out, we can see the effect that causal physical determinism has on everything. So we are all, as we are in this this universe, we have no option but to be affected by causal laws. Because you can, unless you are to go down the Humean route, where David Hume denied, sort of called it a question, cause and effect. He would argue that you only see event A, event B, and you can never really spot and define a causal link. We merely imply the causal link with our minds through sort of habit. But if you do, the majority of people would argue strongly for the existence of cause and effect. Therefore, if you believe in cause and effect, you argue that you argue that everything is caused by something else. So therefore, how can you possibly argue for the existence of free will? You, as throwing a stone into a pond causes ripples. Events in your own life affect you. So you can't say, oh yeah, of course, well, the pond is affected by cause and effect, but you know, I have free will, I have agency. Phil writes, of course we have free will, I chose to tune into your show. But did you really have any other option? So I'm gonna ask, how do we know we have free will? And also, that's a pretty difficult question to answer. A secondary question: does the idea of there not being free will make you feel happy or uneasy? How does the possibility that there might not be free will make you feel? Because there's normally a huge range of answers. Some people are, well, I'm not going to put words into your minds. So just let me know in the chat box, oneradio.org/S. And call in on Skype. My Skype name is rodders.com, rhodders.com. And yeah, just so the best way to contact the show is honestly by calling. The second best way is in the chat box, oneradio.org/S. We have Kieran, we have Westy, we have Phil in there, and a few others. And SB is tuned from a car. He's running away to the circus. Brilliant. Was SB always... Was he predetermined to go to the circus? Could he at the last minute decide not to go to the circus? According to people who believe in hard determinism, he would have no option whatsoever. Just let me know, do you think we have free will? And also, the more interesting question is, how does the possibility that there might not be such a thing as free will make you feel? This is Idle Talk, and the first person to call in, I want to try a thought experiment on you. There's a very clever thought experiment written by someone called, John Locke, which really, I wasn't so convinced by argument, because the intuitive thing is, well, of course I have free will. I'm choosing to wave my arms and run around screaming, etc. Or, you know, I'm choosing to listen to this radio show, as Phil said. But Locke gave a very, very interesting thought experiment, an example of how free will may appear to be here, but could be a complete and utter illusion. This is Idle Talk on oneradio.org.
Having a rave in Plato's cave.
This is Idle Talk. We have the free will whether or not we continue listening after this point, or do we? Tonight we're talking about free will and determinism. Physical determinism dictates that the universe acts basically like a massive machine, a massive, hugely complicated, ridiculous mesh of cogs and levers. Say you pull one cog, it grinds against another, which sets the whole thing in motion. At a molecular level, molecules are bumping into each other. Everything that happens is a result of an antecedent event. Everything happens because something happened as a result of something happening previously. Therefore, we are also subjected to this and really have no choice in what we do. So we're going to take some messages on this. I asked before the break, do you have free will? And if not, how does it make you feel? Phil Ratson said, it wouldn't surprise me if we didn't have free will. It would explain why I do stupid things like stick knives in toasters to get crumpets out and then get an electric shock. Yet I continue to do this. Brilliant. So already we're seeing some problems with determinism. It absolves you from any responsibility. So Phil's absolute stupidity is not his fault. He was predetermined to put the knife in the toaster. You're lucky to be alive. You seriously are. The IQ of my listeners, as the average, has now been brought down phenomenally by Phil and his toaster. DJ Steve writes in and says, I think we have free will in as much as we can decide to turn left or right. So basically, Steve is sort of arguing for kind of a middle ground between free will and determinism. I think Steve is kind of on the lines of compatibilists. Compatibilists argue that free will and determinism are not completely incompatible. It is not apparently a contradiction, according to compatibilists, that I can have free will yet still be in some senses determined. They argue that you can sort of have both. For example, if tomorrow it's a holiday, you can decide what to do with a holiday. For example, you could say, "Oh, I'm going to swim the channel," but you always have the choice to stop swimming the channel. You wouldn't have to complete the task you've set yourself. So it's nice to think that we have a degree of free will. This version of compatibilism, which I'm presenting, in a somewhat uncharitable way, I'm not particularly convinced by compatibilism. I think maybe if it was argued if you could define some sort of compatibilism where you have limited free will, you have free will, well as Steve so nicely puts it, you have the options to whether to turn left or right. So within a very small field of things, like I could choose what sandwich I can see problems in this analogy, but you know, I'm heading into the nosedive. I can choose what sandwich to eat for lunch, but I can't choose not to eat. It doesn't work, does it? Because I could, I'd just die, wouldn't I? Or get a rumbly tummy. So perhaps we have free will in a very limited respect. We have no influence at all on the great workings of the universe. I have no influence over say the weather, but I could choose whether to set my alarm or not tomorrow. And sort of small things that on a par with the rest of the universe pale into insignificance, but on a minute day-to-day way are sort of our version of free will, I guess. Wesley says, free will is something you do as you have a choice, but then if you're restricted by a choice, it's free will. I don't understand what you're saying there, Wesley. You might want to call in. That sounds like a complete contradiction. So let's work this out. Free will is something you do as you have a choice. Yeah, so choices equal free will. Then if you're restricted by choice, it is free will. But surely if your choices are restricted, that limits your free will. For example, for there to be any sort of free will in any sort of meaningful sense, you have to have options. If you're confined to something so trivial, such as I have the option to scratch my ear or not to scratch my ear, it is hard to say you have a degree of free will, but it's meaningless, isn't it? It has no real bearing on even yourself. I guess it does depend on the degree of itchiness of your ear. Laplace wrote a rather interesting piece in which he wrote, we ought to regard the present state of the universe as the effect of its antecedent state and as a cause of the state that is to follow. An intelligence knowing all the forces acting in nature at a given instant, if this intelligence was sort of clever enough, it could then predict exactly what was going to happen. So if you could know all the laws of physics, if your brain swallowed Wikipedia, and if you knew every single law of physics, then you could predict what's going to happen. But then you'd never get, you're unlikely to develop anything of that nature. But say theoretically you could. Does it still prove there is no free will? Because something is predictable, even to a total accurate, 100% predictable, does that actually have any impact or bearing on free will at all? I'm not entirely sure. Because surely, a lot of this becomes quite, because if you, it's like in Macbeth or the Scottish play, people say if they're ridiculously superstitious actors. It became, Macbeth was told by the witches he'd become Thane of Cawdor, and he went and did all these things in order to fulfill the prophecy. But, and it sort of raises the question of free will and determinism. Well done, Shakespeare. He was a clever guy. Because did Macbeth kill Banquo and all these people in order to fulfill the prophecy, to make the prophecy fulfilled, or did he do it as a result of the prophecy? Was Macbeth predetermined, sort of stuck on this course, like a train stuck on tracks, unable to move from the sort of driving force of fate sending him forward? It's a mind-boggling sort of thing, determinism, because it has also, as I said earlier, it has all sorts of, it has moral implications. If we have no free will, then no one can be, there's no point holding someone accountable for, say, murder or burglary, because they were just predetermined to do that. If I ever end up in front of a judge, which I sincerely hope I don't, I'll place that argument. I'll just do pick up a copy of Spark Notes and present to him an A-level argument for determinism. He'll probably roll his eyes and sentence me to 45 minutes community service. So May says she's eating her dinner. But do you have free will over whether you eat that dinner? May, could you stop eating that dinner? The thing that bothers me about free will and determinism is that you can't really tell either way. If May, listening right now, stops eating her dinner, how do you tell whether that wasn't just meant to happen by the laws of nature? And how do you tell that it was her? How do you distinguish free will from what is determined? I really don't think you can argue for either. You're in this sort of no man's land where we just have to say, oh, I don't know, and sort of shut the book on the issue. But there must be a way around it. It's very confusing. I have a rather nifty thought experiment, if anyone would like to call in and be thought experimented upon. John Locke made, I think this is one of the most convincing arguments for how free will might be a total and utter illusion. A very convincing illusion at that. May says, no, she has no free will to stop eating her dinner because it tastes too good. Well, that settles it. There's no such thing as free will, as proved by the case of listener May's dinner.
Idle Talk on One Radio.
Welcome to your number one. This is One Radio.
Idle Talk on One Radio.
Good evening. This is Idle Talk on OneRadio.org. Tonight we're talking, do we have free will? And if not, how does that make you feel? Some people, there are a myriad of responses to this. It makes me, and people I personally find the whole thing quite scary. I find that unnerving. I'm the sort of person that likes to be very much in control of my life. I feel at my most comfortable psychologically when I have my Google Calendar open in front of me and I know exactly what I'm doing on every single day. It makes me feel in control. To think that I am just, a billiard ball on the table, which is the universe, and absolutely no control over what bashes into me and sends me down into a pocket or whatever, makes me feel admittedly quite scared. Other people take a great amount of, some people on Twitter have been telling me that they take a fair deal of comfort out of the feeling of determinism, because it means nothing's really their fault. They don't have to worry about anything. That, I think, a pretty irresponsible attitude, to be honest. I don't like that approach to life. I even go as far as I condemn that mindset. I think it's irresponsible. Steve writes in and said, we'll take some more messages in a minute, but don't forget, this show is exclusively live on oneradio.org. But if you ever miss a show, you can catch up on the podcast. Go to iTunes right now, type in Idle Talk, and 5-star reviews are greatly, gratefully accepted. Last the last show we did, it was a while ago, unfortunately. We've been rather busy as of late. So I haven't done quite as many shows as I've wanted to. The last show was titled Email and the Alienation of the Worker. Myself and co-host Nicola discussed Marxist alienation, the theory that the capitalist system makes us, it alienates us not only from ourselves, but from our entire species, and there's huge ramifications. We then sort of examined the modern workplace, whether and to try to work out what Marx would think of your average office with the emails and everyone, people sending emails across the desk rather than talking to each other. So you can get that now on iTunes. If you don't use iTunes, which I understand, I personally don't use iTunes. I'm an Android person, mostly because it's an awful lot cheaper. You can go to Audioboo, audioboo.fm/idletalk, and you can listen to the shows with no need to download anything. You can stream it straight from your browser. That's audioboo.fm/idletalk. If you have an Audioboo account, don't forget to follow us, and don't be afraid to record an Audioboo in response to one of the points on the podcast. Arguing's great, even if it's done over Audioboo, and I think that could be a very innovative new sort of use. Let's have a massive theological and philosophical debate over Audioboo, and of course you can go on iTunes as well. That is, if you are using iTunes, the reviews make an awful lot of difference. It makes a lot more people download this show. So let's get back to the matter at hand. A thought experiment which, until I read this, I wasn't convinced. Because the intuitive thing to say is, oh, well, of course I have free will. Don't be stupid. But then Locke gave this example of a man who wakes up. Imagine you're a man or a woman. It doesn't matter. Gender's not important in this one. You're a person and you wake up in a room. Unknown to you, the door is locked from the outside. But you wake up and think, well, I'm going to decide to stay in the room and go back to sleep. Believing, of course, this person believes they have made a conscious choice to stay in the room. But really, although they said, oh yeah, I'm going to stay in the room, in that sense they've made a choice, but really they have no other option because the door is locked. Perhaps the entire universe is like that. Our free will is sort of restricted in that sense. Let's take a few more messages from the chat room. Steve says, I agree that we can't prove or disprove free will because, as you've already pointed out, if it was already determined, how could we tell? There must be a solution to that out there. Maybe I should have done it, because this is a very, very old debate. There's been reams and reams written on it, and I think it's impossible to read. Even if you were, that's a paradox. I was about to say, even if you were determined to read everything on determinism, I don't think you could manage it. But you probably could if you were determined. May earlier said, and made the quip that she was unable, predetermined to eat her dinner because she couldn't stop eating it because it was too tasty. Ian writes in, I think free will can be determined by what you do in everyday life. May didn't eat her dinner, she would get ill, so she needs to eat her dinner to help her live. So that's not free will. So you're arguing for free will, and then the next sentence you argue against it. Because surely, although it would be uncomfortable for May to stop eating because she'd get hungry, she could do it. Couldn't she? I really don't know how you prize apart free will and determinism. How do you tell if something is chosen through agency or just because you're part of this big mechanical monster known as the universe? We're going to move on to the issue of predictability. Because if you could invent a computer, it certainly wouldn't be running Windows Vista, I'll tell you that. That could somehow process and know every single law of physics. You could then predict things. And we're getting better and better at predicting things scientifically. But does this actually mean that, just because something's predictable, does it mean that, does it have any implications on on free will. There is one argument that it doesn't. This works along the lines of predictability. Just because something is highly predictable, it doesn't mean that it's... Just because you're predicted to do something, that you could, there's a small chance you could go against it. Something being very, very likely that it's going to happen doesn't really alter it, does it? Or you can go against that and say, a second, you could just claim that if determinism is true, when we found ourselves in a situation in which, for example, you ask the computer how you're going to flip a coin, and it says, oh, you're definitely going to land it on heads. Well, and of course, the computer is always right because it knows all the laws of physics. You would be unable to not flip the coin as heads, according to the proponent. The response to say that the first response, it just sort of begs the question. It doesn't really get us anywhere. It is an interesting one. Predictability. Because just because something's predicted, things do go awry from predictions. But is that merely the fault of us not being good enough at predicting events? I'm not entirely sure. This is One Radio, and you are listening to me, Rodders, on Idle Talk. We're talking about, well, the mind-blowing topic that is free will and determinism. The really scary development has been the development of neuroscience, in which some scientists have claimed that by scanning your brain and looking for certain electrical impulses and sort of mapping them, that scientists can know what you're going to choose, apparently freely, what they're going to know what you're going to do before you have even thought of it. Very, very scary. We're going to take a short break and we'll be back to talk about this rather terrifying scientific development.
Having a rave in Plato's cave.
Idle Talk on oneradio.org. My name is Rodders. Welcome to the last couple of minutes of the show. Trying to come to some sort of conclusion here. It's a tricky, tricky topic. I'd like some more responses. How does the idea of determinism make you feel? Do you feel comfortable? Because you, nothing really would be your fault. Like Phil Jam earlier, Phil wrote in and said that he basically wouldn't be responsible for doing stupid things like trying to get muffins out of the toaster with a knife and predictably getting an electric shock. So advances in neuroscience now have thrown into question the likelihood of us having free will. Scientists now claim to be able to scan the brain and sort of by looking at neural activity, basically predict what we're going to do before we even know we're going to do it. It's really quite scary. For example, the first one of these experiments, back in the 80s, Benjamin Libet recorded electrical signals from people's scalps and then asked people to periodically raise their fingers. Whilst doing this, they were looking at a clock with a rotating spot. The purpose of that was so that they could record when they had the desire to raise their finger. And they found out that the electrical signals from the scalp happened a couple of milliseconds before the actor willingly recorded it. That was back in the 80s. So now they've done very similar experiments with CAT scanners and far more advanced bits of equipment, which... It's kind of, it's scary, isn't it? Because then supposedly we could get to a sort of situation where we could take around a device in our pocket that could be capable of essentially reading someone's mind, knowing what they're going to do before they do it. The philosopher Andrea Roskins argues that this experiment doesn't really prove anything of the sort. There's two main problems with this. In order to get interpretable data, you have to average so many trials that it just becomes a bit of a nonsense, where it gets to the point where individual cases amount to absolutely nothing. So it's not really so she claims it's not really a very workable experiment. Also, the thing I always worry about, because we know so little about the brain, and we're gradually learning more and more, when people love CAT scans, and they do CAT scans, like, oh yeah, well, this lighting up means this. The brain is so complex that how do we know that, say, the electrical impulse that Benjamin Levitt recorded happening before someone raising their finger, how do we know that wasn't totally incidental? It was related to something else and had absolutely nothing to do with it. You could say that seeing a seagull, if a seagull happened to land outside the laboratory every time someone happened to record them raising their finger, you could argue that the seagull is causally related to the person raising their finger. So therefore, if you see a seagull, you know someone's going to have the desire to raise their finger. That's sort of a parody, almost a straw man, but it kind of illustrates the point that you could just be implying all sorts of false inferences, which is... It doesn't strike me as very good science, or even, you know, certainly not very good philosophy. But if it could be true, if these experiments one day get to such a stage, it's weird. We could end up like a Minority Report style thing where you have pre-crime. You don't need weird bald twins in a jacuzzi having weird dreams. You just need some bloke with an app on his iPhone. Absolutely terrifying. So I consider the free will issue, I think there's two ways of doing it. I think someone forced me to make a conclusion here, I guess I would have to argue that either, number one, that you can't tell if something is as a result of free will or a result of determinism. You can't really prize the two apart. Or I would argue that yes, we are completely and utterly causally determined. One atom bangs into another. Life is but a marble run. I'm just a marble being shunted by another marble down a plastic tube. But the universe is so infinitely complicated that, as discussed earlier, it isn't possible to predict. You can predict bits of the universe. Like, say, even if you could predict when someone's going to move their finger, you can't really go beyond that. You can only report upon very small areas. Therefore, the world is so infinitely complicated. Sure, it's predetermined, but we can't really do anything with that predeterminism. So therefore, we might as well act as if we have free will. That's probably what I'd go for. Also, Roskins also argues against this neurological argument for determinism by saying that the experiment doesn't really report on one's sort of ability to know when they're going to move their finger. It basically just reports upon the awareness of the awareness, so you're not really reporting on the state. It's like it's basically saying it is just reporting when someone is aware of the urge to move one's finger, where the urge to move one finger could have been a couple of milliseconds before then. So it's not really... It does sound to me like quite a crude experiment, because if you're told to stop a stopwatch at a minute, you can't do that, can you? So if you've got to raise a finger and then look at a clock, there's bound to be a lag. And also, as I think I would agree with the criticism that you're not really... you're not really reporting upon the thing you're meant to be talking about. It's a mind-boggling issue. Idle Talk should be back next week with another mind-blowing topic. You can always suggest topics. I don't always... It depends on what they are, but I really would like some suggestions. You can email me, radio@rodders.com, or get in touch via Twitter, @Rodders, or facebook.com/thisisrodders, RHODDRS. Suggest a topic that you'd like me to explore, and maybe, just maybe in a couple of weeks' time, Idle Talk will be discussing your topic. Thanks very much for listening tonight. This has been Rodders on Idle Talk. Back next week, same time, 9 p.m. The show is live 9 p.m. until 10 p.m. on oneradio.org and available as a podcast on iTunes and Audioboo. Thanks very much and good night.